It was great to see that one of our local institutions is involved in this incredible research that could help with ensuring that we bring down figures when it comes to stillbirths and infant deaths. There's a bacterial infection that is found in 1 in 5 pregnant women worldwide, which is responsible for an estimated just under 150,000 stillbirths annually. And researchers revealed on Monday that there's been great work going on and that a vaccine is urgently needed. The study was published in the journal Clinical Infectious Diseases and is the first comprehensive look at the impact of this this particular bacteria, group B, of the Streptococcus infection, which is estimated to live harmlessly in the intestinal tract of up to a third of all adults. But when a pregnant woman carries the bacteria, it can pass to her fetus, and therein lies the risks. So joining us about the work that's been going on, particularly at Wits University, we have Professor Shabir Mahdi, and he's a professor of vaccinology at Wits University. Good afternoon, Prof. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Good afternoon, Azania, and thanks for having me.
This is so interesting, so fascinating. So there are different types of strep, if I can just simply use the shortened version, different types of this bacteria that exists.
Correct. So Streptococcus is sort of a large family of bacteria, mm-hmm. and amongst that there's what we call GBS or group B strep. And that is the bacteria that is of particular interest to us in terms of when women become colonized with it. As you mentioned, the colonization takes place in the vagina and the GIT. And generally, women are not affected, but unfortunately, their fetuses might be affected, or the babies that they deliver might actually be affected.
Right. So does this infection then happen in vitro through the amniotic fluid and through the birth canal during birth?
Yeah. So our understanding of it is what happens is that there's sort of a translocation of the bacteria into the uterus. So it mm-hmm. occurs while the fetus is still in the uterus. And what might happen then is that it enters into the bloodstream of the fetus and can cause the fetus to actually die immediately, which results in a stillbirth. On occasion, what might happen is that the infection might still establish itself in utero, but a baby is born alive, but manifests signs of severe disease very soon after they're actually born.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So how have we been treating it so far? And why? I want to understand why a vaccination and how it could work. What is the intervention currently?
Yeah, so the current intervention, which is mainly used in high-income countries and which unfortunately from a logistical perspective would be difficult to implement in resource-constrained settings, is that women are usually screened for colonization at about 34 to 37 weeks of gestational age. Mm. And if the mother is found to be colonized, then the recommendation is that when the mother goes into labor, that she receives a shot of antibiotics, penicillin. But that needs to be administered at least 4 hours before the baby is born. And that will hopefully prevent, or has been successful in terms of preventing disease in the newborn. Mm. Unfortunately, that strategy is unlikely to actually prevent the stillbirth component of GBS disease. So based on our understanding of the disease itself, it appears that the only real sort of solution that could potentially prevent both stillbirths as well as prevent young babies from becoming infected and becoming very ill,
yeah.
is by vaccinating the mothers themselves while they're pregnant. So when we vaccinate the mother when she's pregnant, what we're really trying to achieve is to increase the amount of antibodies, sort of soldiers, in the blood of the mother.
Mm-hmm.
And those antibodies then are transferred over to the fetus while the fetus is still in the uterus. And it's the presence of those antibodies which is then able to kill off the bacteria should the child come into contact with the bacteria.
Right. Sure. So at the point of pregnancy, so it should be part then of prenatal care. And you made the point earlier on about income, certain countries that are of a particular income level. So that suggests that these interventions aren't available to developing countries and say in rural areas or where you find the health system having poor infrastructure. So the likelihood of a poor woman living in a rural area getting the vaccine, getting antibiotic, not the vaccine, the antibiotic are very low. And this intervention of having a vaccine during pregnancy needs to be part and parcel then of prenatal care.
That's correct. So like I mentioned, the logistics behind using the antibiotic strategy would be fairly complex for resource-constrained settings. And there are a number of concerns in terms of giving women antibiotics when they're pregnant and the type of impact that might actually have on the fetus and on the babies of those mothers. So that's a whole new area of research. But a strategy which we've used previously for other conditions, and one of the conditions which you might have heard about is called tetanus, neonatal tetanus.
Yes.
Not until very recently, over 1 million babies used to die because of neonatal tetanus in the early 1990s. And we've been able to reduce that figure to less than 50,000 each year now. And the way we've been able to do that is that we vaccinate pregnant women routinely with a tetanus vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And it works in exactly the same way. You give the mother the vaccine, the antibodies transfer over to the baby, and the baby is protected. So we are hoping to replicate that sort of a strategy in terms of being able to prevent group B strep disease in the fetus as well as in the young infants.
Absolutely. So some of the risks that at the moment with the antibiotic being administered, does that suggest that there could be this antimicrobial resistance that the baby then has?
Yeah, so the concerns with antibiotics generally, as you mentioned, relates to antimicrobial resistance or emergence of antimicrobial resistant bacteria.
Yeah.
And in the case of penicillin, which has been used in the U.S., there has been some suggestion that it has increased antibiotic resistance to other bacteria, which the babies might become infected with.
Hmm.
But the other evolving field of research actually now suggests that when giving pregnant women antibiotics, when a child is born, it might actually interfere with what we call the microbiome of the baby. So the microbiome are the sort of healthy bacteria that colonize the GIT, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And that might actually be impacted in a baby whose mothers receive antibiotics. And because of that microbiome being altered, that child might actually be at increased susceptibility as an example of developing allergies.
Yes.
So antibiotics have gotten a very important role in medicine, but at the same time, increasingly we're beginning to realize the sort of negative impact it might actually have on fetal development as well as on the development of babies, as well as children that are exposed too frequently to antibiotics.
Yes. So the screening that happens at 34 weeks, how easy would that be to be implemented across in our clinics and especially in the public healthcare sector?
Yes, so unfortunately in South Africa it's unlikely to work. The reason for that is we've got a relatively fragmented healthcare system. What I'm talking about is when I'm talking of the screening, what happens is that a swab is done of the vagina and the rectum. That needs to be sent off to a laboratory to be tested. The result needs to come back. And that result needs to be available to the person that will be delivering the mother to make sure that the mother gets the antibiotics when they're being delivered. Unfortunately, in the public health care system, we don't have a single nurse looking after a single patient, unlike in the private sector, as an example. So there's always a risk of sort of a breakage in terms of what should be a continuity of care. That even if the mother is colonized, it might be that the person that's delivering the mother doesn't know the result or doesn't have access to the result. So it's also it's a fairly expensive process to actually get all of those steps to work. So like I said, it's unlikely that in resource-constrained settings, especially in the public sector in South Africa, as an example, that we would be successful in implementing that sort of a strategy. As well as they've been able to implement it in the United States, as an example.
Yes. So how far is the development of this vaccine? Is it now just an understanding that we would require a vaccine, that it's urgently needed, or has work already started?
Yeah, so the work on the vaccine development has already started. And in fact, this work started way back in the 1970s, but it's only in the recent 3 to 4 years that it's really gained traction. And the first vaccine, which contains different strains of the group B strep, is what we actually evaluated in Soweto in South Africa in pregnant women.
Mm.
In terms of the timelines, our prediction right now is that we're still at an investigational stage. And we're hoping that a vaccine would become available or be licensed roughly in about 5 to 8 years from now.
Right.
Unfortunately, vaccine development is a lengthy process because what we really, what's of real concern to us firstly, is to make sure that the vaccine is safe before it's effective. So we need to go through a number of steps to ensure safety before we're able to evaluate whether the vaccine actually works.
Okay, so to know that one of our own institutions is involved is uplifting. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
That's a professor of vaccinology at Wits University. So the work is happening. And if a vaccine is developed that is at least 80% effective and reaches 90% of women, it would potentially prevent 231,000 cases of infant and maternal deaths due to this particular strain of this bacteria.